From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. There is certainly trouble in the Muslim world, and some of it has come here to America. But the political conversation in this country lately can sound like it's veering straight into Islamophobia and away from American bedrock values like freedom of religion and equal rights. Politicians say truth-telling, critics say bigotry. This hour on Point, Islam and American politics, right now. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on, with Ben Carson and Donald Trump and the Clock Boy in Texas. What do you see going on here? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Donald Trump already had some hubbub going on, and then NBC's Meet the Press on Sunday. Republican presidential candidate Ben Carson said he would not want a Muslim president. When answered, he answered questions about the Constitution and faith.
Should your faith matter to voters?
Well, I guess it depends on what that faith is. If it's inconsistent with the values and principles of America, then of course it should matter.
So do you believe that Islam is consistent with the Constitution?
No, I don't. I do not. I would not advocate that we put a Muslim in charge of this nation. I absolutely would not agree with that.
Okay, that got a big response. We'll talk about it. But there was already a lot rolling out there. On this exchange, you heard it, Donald Trump in Rochester, New Hampshire on Thursday did not take issue with a very straightforwardly anti-Muslim questioner in the audience.
We have a problem in this country. It's called Muslims. We know our current president is one. Right. You know he's not even an American.
We need this
first
question.
Certificate
this
man.
First
but anyway, we have training camps growing where they want to kill us.
Mm-hmm.
That's my question. When can we get rid of
it? We're going to be looking at a lot of different things. And, you know, a lot of people are saying that, and a lot of people are saying that bad things are happening out there. We're going to be looking at that and plenty of other things.
When can we get rid of them? We're going to be looking at a lot of different things. That got people's attention. Not all Republicans lining up with this. Monday night, Colley Fiorina, Republican candidate, appeared on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, denouncing there Ben Carson's comments.
Ben Carson's in a lot of trouble now because he's saying that he would not advocate a Muslim being president.
Well, I think that's wrong. You know, it says in our Constitution that religion cannot be a test for office. It is also true that this country was founded on the principle that we judge each individual and that anyone of any faith is welcome here.
Carly Fiorina on the U.S. Constitution. But here's Donald Trump. This was Sunday. George Stephanopoulos asks if Muslims are a problem in this country.
In some cases, George, we can say no, and you can be politically correct and say everything's wonderful, but I haven't seen people from Sweden going back and leaving after the bombing of the World Trade Center. So certainly it's a problem, and there is a problem.
What is the problem specifically?
And at the same time, we have fabulous people living here, Muslims, and they have done fantastically well. But certainly it is a problem. You look around the world, it is a problem. And, you know, if I want to say, oh, no, not at all, people would laugh at me.
We're going to hear a bunch of voices in this hour. We start in Washington with Igor Bobik, Associate Editor for Politics at the Huffington Post. Igor Bobik, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with Ben Carson. He has come out and looked to clarify. Many on Fox News have sort of woven some elaboration around what he said there, saying is not so bad. What's Ben Carson's follow-up been to his statement to Chuck Todd?
Well, he's really just trying to soften his position now that, you know, he's saying that he was really talking about radical Islam, Sharia law, his objection to theocracy. But that's not really what he said on Meet the Press. I mean, he was flatly asked, does he object to a Muslim president? Would he vote for a Muslim president? He said he would not. And you know what he did? He really stepped it up a level there. The conversation around Islam, at least in Washington and elected politicians, has been mostly about radical Islam, what to do about radical Islam, certainly among Republicans, you know, why President Obama isn't standing up to radical Islam, why isn't he calling it as such. Ben Carson really took it to another level and said flat out all Muslims shouldn't become president, that their values are inconsistent with the Constitution. So he's seeing quite a bit of backlash now among his fellow rivals for the Republican nomination, saying that, you know, they don't agree with that. But, you know, for him, the good news is, and good news is relative here, is that a lot of his base really agrees with him. There was a poll yesterday in Iowa among Iowa Republicans saying that, you know, 50%, only 50% say that Islam should be legal. A poll in June, a Gallup poll in June, found that 38% of Republicans agree with Ben Carson. So he's got some breathing room here, but he's certainly facing his first test here of his candidacy.
Of course, not all Republicans by any means lining up with him. Here was Ted Cruz. This was on Iowa Public Television on Sunday. The senator, a presidential hopeful, saying, look, there's a constitution, and it doesn't allow for that kind of discrimination.
The Constitution provides that there shall be no religious test for public office, and I'm a constitutionalist.
He's a constitutionalist. You're a political editor, Igor Bobic. Is this working for Ben Carson? I mean, you say among some it is. How far can Donald Trump, Ben Carson, ride this kind of footsie with, you know, some what can look pretty ugly?
Yeah, I mean, it's not pretty for the country, certainly. But, you know, for Ben Carson, he's really going in the mold of Donald Trump here. He sees that Donald Trump's comments about immigrants, you know, saying that some of them are rapists or criminals or whatnot, that worked for him. And Ben Carson is really, you know, following in his footsteps now. But it's not working as well as it did for Trump. But, you know, we're going to see in the next couple of days whether this has any kind of effect on his polling.
Igor Bobic, the Huffington Post, thank you very much for being with us for a minute today.
Thank you.
The radio airwaves burning up with pretty tough analysis of the Muslim community in this country. Here's just a sample of that. This is from Jeff Kuhner, a conservative talk show, Kuhner Report, bills himself as liberalism's worst nightmare. He talked on a show on Monday about all the ways in which he thinks Muslims just don't line up with American ideals.
We don't believe homosexuals should be stoned and murdered because they're gay. We don't believe Jews and Christians are second-class citizens. We don't believe that women should be enslaved and should walk around covered from head to toe and not be allowed to drive or not be allowed to be educated or not be allowed to vote. I'm sorry, we don't believe in that. We do not believe in racial gender segregation and religious segregation at the heart of Sharia law. We don't. I'm sorry, that's for another system.
Jeff Kuhner on the Kuhner Report. I want to turn to Muslim scholar, writer, and Sunni cleric Sheikh Dr. Yasser Qadhi with us from Memphis, Tennessee, professor of religious studies at Rhodes College. Yasser Qadhi, welcome back to On Point. Thank you for being with us.
Hey, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So there's a conservative who says, look at Islam, and it just doesn't line up with American values. And you heard the list he just went down. Homosexuals should be stoned and murdered. Islam would do that, is his suggestion. We can't have that in America, and right on down the list. What do you make of that?
Well, I find it amazing that certain segments of the right seem to be more knowledgeable about Islamic Sharia and what it means than the vast majority of Muslims that I happen to know and teach. I mean, the fact of the matter is that their interpretation of Sharia is a concoction of half-truths, irrelevant factoids, and sensationalized, you know, selective quotations. I would really appreciate if people would ask Muslims who practice the faith what they think of the Sharia. I wouldn't understand the Sharia at all to be what your previous quote suggested it to be.
So, how do you feel as your faith gets put under this kind of scrutiny, up to and including whether or not a Muslim should be president ever? I guess of the United States.
Well, I mean, it's just sad to see that we never seem to learn from history. You know, the number of times that a segment of our own country has been marginalized or feared or stereotyped is staggering, whether it's the Irish or the Jews or the Catholics. You know, let's not forget that barely a generation ago, due to the consistent paranoia being parroted by the predecessors of today's Ben Carsons, tens of thousands of loyal Japanese Americans were, in effect, you know, put into open house jails, our version of concentration camps. And remember, all of this was legal, and it was deemed legal by the Supreme Court. Now, my point is, in order for such a draconian tactic to be approved of by the majority, that majority must systematically and over a period of time be taught to fear a minority. And this is exactly what we're seeing happening right now. And therefore, as an American Muslim, a father of four kids, frankly, it's somewhat terrifying because is it even possible that American Muslims might someday be rounded up and perhaps dealt with even more harshly than Japanese Americans? I mean, let us not forget, Donald Trump was point blank asked, what are we going to do to get rid of him? And not a single person booed in the audience, not a single person corrected that. Mr. Trump himself tacitly said, we're going to be looking at all options on the table. Now, what does that mean for me as an American, you know, father of four children? Honestly, there is an element of fear right now in for American Muslims.
Why do you think this is coming now? I mean, it's all these years after 9/11. We just had yet another anniversary, and it's, you know, it is now 14 years ago. That's a pretty long time. Why now this?
I think it's pretty clear. The fact of the matter is that this is a type of racist drivel with a political agenda. We just need to call this type of rhetoric for what it is. It's basically intentionally being used to firstly create a bogeyman that does not exist, and secondly to then effectively prop up support for crass politicians who can then claim to champion the rights of the majority against this manufactured and non-existent threat. I mean, dare I say, I firmly believe that Mr. Carson and Mr. Trump know full well that American Muslims do not represent the slightest existential threat to America.
But maybe people look out at ISIS and look out at the refugee crisis in Europe coming out of the Middle East and say, oh, that's a lot of trouble. We don't want that.
Well, again, here's the point, though, to extrapolate to the entire mm-hmm. Muslim world or the entire American Muslim community. I mean, you know, a few years ago, Mother Jones, the famous magazine,
yep.
did a thorough survey of all of the mass shootings that are taking place in America for the last 30 years. And surprise, surprise, they discovered that the overwhelming majority of those shooters were white Caucasian males. Now, should I extrapolate that statistic and say, well, I'm worried about, you know, mass shooters in my neighborhood and then, you know, stereotype every white yeah. Caucasian male?
Fair.
Again, that's the point. It's bigotry and racism.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Islam, American politics, and Islamophobia in America. There's a lot of angry, frightened talk out there lately. We're looking at what is going on. Sheikh Dr. Yasser Qadhi joins us from Memphis, Tennessee, professor of religious studies at Rhodes College there. Sandy Rios joins us in a moment from the American Family Radio, talk longtime Fox News contributor. Depending what you listen to, you can hear a lot of this. I don't know how much you listen to Fox or watch it, but here was Ben Carson on Fox News with Sean Hannity on Monday talking about those comments that Carson had made about Muslims and the presidency. A lot of people on Fox all over the network saying those are misrepresented. And here Hannity going after that vein here. It goes on for about a minute, but it's an interesting exchange. Sean Hannity and Ben Carson.
I spoke with Dr. Zudi Jasser today. He's a moderate Muslim. And I asked if he could name a single Muslim country that treats women the way we treat women or minorities the way we treat minorities in this country. He couldn't name a single one. Was that what you were thinking in your mind when you were answering the question? In other words, the way Muslim theocracies currently operate?
That's correct. I mean, they currently do not tend to operate the same way that our system does. Now, if someone has a Muslim background and they're willing to reject those tenets and to accept the way of life that we have, and clearly will swear to place our Constitution above their religion, then, of course, they will be considered infidels and heretics. But at least I would then be quite willing to support them.
All right. So what I hear in your statement there is you kind of are tempering those remarks.
Tempering those remarks, says Sean Hannity. Yasser Qadhi, do you hear a tempering of remarks from Ben Carson there? If a candidate, a Muslim candidate, would clearly swear to place our Constitution above their religion, then, of course, he would welcome them.
Well, again, I have to say, and I'm sorry for being so frank here, but the double standards and the outright hypocrisy demonstrated by some of these same people really needs to be called out. Why is it that these same critics can apply Christian doctrines of marriage and Christian notions of life and conception, to vigorously oppose federal laws on same-sex unions, on abortion, and even consider people like, let's say, Kim Davis to be martyrs for a Christian cause. But simultaneously, Muslim Americans are not allowed to express their ethical views. Nobody wants to supplant the Constitution, but every American has the right to express what they agree or disagree about any aspect of our country. That's what makes this country great. To assume that any disagreement is tantamount to heresy or treason is itself treacherous to the American Constitution.
Yasser Qadhi, please stand by in Memphis, Tennessee. I want to turn to Sandy Rios in Washington, host of Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio, longtime Fox News contributor. Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
My pleasure, Tom.
So you hear Dr. Qadhi saying he feels under attack. He feels American Muslims under attack. You've said very recently, Sandy, that the GOP candidates are under attack and it's liberals attacking them. What do you see going on here, Sandy?
Well, I think what's going on is a lack of understanding about Islam, and I think that Dr. Qadhi is expressing what the Council on American Islamic Relations would say. This is a PR campaign that is filled with delusion, Tom.
You mean Ben Carson and Donald Trump is a PR campaign, or what?
The problem is that Islam is not just a religion. It is in part, but most of it, is a political system. You can't compare Islam to Christianity, Islam to Buddhism, Islam to Judaism, because Islam is a political system that demands, through Sharia, obeyance to Sharia above anything. And that's why we have Muslims going into countries now, flooding into Europe, coming into the United States, and then coming into communities and populating, and then starting to demand that Sharia be adhered to, because they believe in overpowering and conquering. They believe in outpopulating. And Sharia law is actually a very dreadful system. If under Sharia law, women are circumcised, men have multiple wives, there are honor killings for children who, especially girls, who don't add up. There are terrible things that are done under Sharia. It is not compatible with the U.S. Constitution.
Sandy, let me ask you, if I may. You know, in many religions, there are old-fashioned or orthodox versions that lots of adherents would not adhere to. I mean, you can find that in Christianity. You can find that certainly in Judaism. And no doubt you can find it in Islam. But we carve out room for a secular life in this country for Americans who people who come to this country and become part of our system. It's in the Constitution.
Well, that's true, Tom. I don't disagree with that. Our Constitution is a separation. There's no question about it.
But you don't seem to be separating
religion. No, because Islam doesn't separate. Islam is a different thing. We've never dealt with this before. That's why the confusion. And I would just say, you know, the difference is if a Muslim American can renounce Sharia. But they can't just say it. They have to prove it because they have a practice known as taqiyya, which means it's okay for Dr. Qadhi to lie to you and to lie to me.
So you're going to put Muslims in a different category from all other human beings?
Yes, I would. Yes, because they are a political system. That's exactly what I would do. And I would advise anyone listening to me to go to Muslim Brotherhood in America, the website, and read about Islam, or get any of the writings of Andy McCarthy, who prosecuted the blind sheikh at the First World Trade Center building, to educate themselves on why the confusion. And part of the confusion...
But doesn't it seem un-American to carve people out, put them in a special category, and dump all that on them, Sandy, when they're participating in this country's political system, their citizens?
It's un-American to me, Tom, to spread delusion and to speak dishonest things, which is, I think, what the media is doing and what Dr. Qadhi and people with the Council of American Islamic Relations is all about. They lied to us. And so the American people have been lied to since 9/11. We've been lied to. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't Muslims who do not embrace Sharia, and that's a totally different thing. But Sharia law is a huge chunk of what Islam is all about.
Sandy, stand by. We've got callers for you and Yasser Qadhi. Valerie in Harrisonburg, Virginia. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I just want to say I can't believe what I'm hearing. This is America, and I can't believe what I'm hearing. I used to live in Arizona, where we locked up a bunch of Japanese Americans during World War II, and this really harkens to that, and I'm just disappointed and disgusted. And that's pretty much all I want to say.
When Sandy Rios says it's just because you don't understand the problem here, what are you thinking, Valerie?
I have a master's degree. I'm a psychotherapist. I have a pretty good understanding of what I need to understand, and hate is not to be understood.
Valerie, I appreciate your call. Irfan is calling from Sharon, Massachusetts. One second. Well, I'll come to you, Sandy. Irfan, you're on the air.
Okay. All right.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for talking about this. And I'm actually very glad that we are talking about this publicly, but the one piece that's missing is actually American Muslim families. They are the taking brunt of these conservatives who are going out and misinforming people. For example, myself, I'm pursuing a doctorate degree. My wife has a doctorate degree.
Yes.
My kids. So what do I tell my kids that, well, your dreams of being president is off because certain segments of population doesn't want you to be president? And at the end of the day, we look at the conversation is shifting towards from fear-mongering to clearly putting these communities in a draconian laws. I mean, nobody has to go out and prove that if they are Jewish or they are Catholic or they are Protestant or they are United Minister. At the end of the day, you are a constructive, productive American citizen. And I happen to be my family happens to be
yeah.
Muslim.
If on standby, Sandy Rios, I mean, you know, how do you feel about talking to someone like Irfan in this way? He's got a family here. He's American. He feels assaulted as a Muslim American by raising.
I'm not too concerned about hurt feelings because I get
Why not? I mean, shouldn't his kids be able to look at this country and say this is my country?
This is what I would say to him. If you want your son to be president, if he would like to be president, then he needs to become an American who absolutely distances himself and rejects Sharia law. He must do that before he can be president.
Would you say that about an American who disagrees with the Supreme Court on abortion, with the standing law on abortion?
Jews and Catholics and Protestants don't have to. Their doctrine does not teach the overthrow of a government or the subjection of the people that they move in with. That's what Islam teaches. They are not the same. It's apples to oranges. And I would say to your caller, you know, absolutely he's welcome here if he does not adhere to Sharia and if he will assimilate into American culture and swear obedience to the Constitution.
Irfan, I mean, he's a citizen. He doesn't have to swear beyond being a citizen. Irfan, what do you say to Sandy?
I actually took my oath in front of a judge in Chicago court, and the judge, Mr. Bernstein, told me at that time that this is an experiment 226 years old. It's in your hand to take the baton and run with it. So the day I took my passport, I do not have to reject my faith at the end of the day. This is absolute absurd conversation in a public arena. It seems like 1939 where the Jewish community had to wear a gold star. This is not the way Americans talk. This is absolutely stupid to actually even talk about this at this stage. Then I have to tell my kids that he has to distance himself from his faith. That's an absurd. Nobody wakes up and tells their kids that, well, you're not going to be Catholic today because you want to be president. Absolutely not.
Irfan, you're welcome here, and I appreciate your call, and I appreciate your sincerity. Hang in there. Sandy Rios with Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio. Thank you to you for joining us. Dr. Yasser Qadhi, listening in Memphis, Tennessee. There was a lot laid out there. Dive in, sir.
Well, the fact of the matter is I think people like Sandy Rios have spoken loudly and clearly, and I don't think there's any need to refute anything she said because she refuted herself. I think anybody who believes that type of delusional paranoia cannot be reasoned with. To believe that millions of Muslims have this secret organization that they want to overthrow the entire world, I mean, you cannot reason with people who have these delusional views. And what's frightening is that these people represent large segments of this country. They represent many times more the number of Muslim Americans. And that type of fear drives radical legislation, the like of which we already heard about, such as the Japanese internment camps. That's really what's frightening. But I'm happy that people like you, Tom, and many, many other people are pointing this bigotry out and saying we're not going to go down that path.
I want to talk about this just a little bit, because as you point out, you've got, the poll numbers come back in a way that's very eye-catching on this. You're a professor of religious studies. Just do us the favor of picking this up for a minute. Sandy Rios is not a theologian, but when she says Islam is different from all other religions, talk to us.
Well, again, obviously, this notion that somehow we are going to be different and they get away with it. So, and again, I pointed this out, when mainstream Christians strongly, vigorously oppose legislation here in America, that is deemed as patriotic, right? And my point is, let American Muslims say whatever they want as long as they're going to follow the peaceful process. And all indications clearly show that 99.999% of American Muslims are just like all other Muslims. They have their views. Let them have their ethics. Let them have their morality. Let Jews derive their morality from the halakha. Let Christians or Catholics, let's say, derive their morality from...
the halakha, you're talking about traditional Jewish law there?
Yes, the halakha is the Jewish traditional law. That's what makes this country great. So to assume that somehow Muslims have some type of secret agenda, not only is it nonsensical and bordering on paranoia, as I said, it's actually a type of fear-mongering that might, in effect, legislate certain harmful things against American Muslims. The Sharia is interpreted by different Muslims in different ways. And the fact of the matter is the far-right interpretation of the Sharia, in actual effect, probably agrees more with ISIS than the mainstream American Muslims, the mainstream Muslims of the world, to be honest.
You're saying, by that what? You're distancing mainstream Americans from Sharia?
Not at all. From those interpretations of Sharia. I am an American Muslim, and I follow my interpretation of Sharia. I'm a loyal, patriotic American Muslim, and I am proud to be Muslim, and I practice Sharia. For me, Sharia means be kind to the poor. It means to pray regularly. It means to take care of orphans. I have my interpretations of the Sharia. I understand this is a country that is based on secular values. Neither I nor the vast majority of American Muslims have any notion or inkling of wanting to supplant the Constitution. And frankly, the claim that all of us are colluding together to lie is again so nonsensical that you rationally speaking, you simply cannot. There's no need to refute such a doctrine.
I mean, it's certainly hurtful. We heard Irfan talking about his family. How does he talk to his kids? I mean, this is an inclusive nation. Yasser Qadhi, please stand by in Memphis. With us right now from Rochester, Minnesota, is Todd Green, associate professor of religion at Luther College, author of The Fear of Islam, An Introduction to Islamophobia in the West. Todd Green, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
There's a long history here, but what do you see going on right now in the politics and the cultural conversation of this country around this issue?
I see, particularly among GOP candidates and particularly Trump and Carson, a concerted, deliberate effort to stir up anxiety, hostility, and hatred toward Muslims for political gain. And this does tend to happen with election cycles, particularly post 9/11. But I thought it would be difficult to top what happened in 2012 with people like Newt Gingrich comparing Muslims to Nazis and Herman Cain saying he would never nominate or allow a Muslim in his cabinet. But we are now in a cycle where we are seeing candidates tripping over each other, trying to target Muslims in order to leverage votes.
And why? Why now?
Well, there's a lot of things going on now, but primarily because Islamophobia is not getting better, it's getting worse. And this sentiment is something that these candidates are tapping into. This is progressively getting worse, not only since 9/11, but I would say particularly since 2010, after the Park 51 controversy in Lower Manhattan. And we've seen by almost every
the building
measure
there that remind us of that controversy.
Yeah, so this is the proposed Islamic Center that was going to be built in Lower Manhattan, some blocks away from Ground Zero, but it became this huge controversy and just, you know, the media was obsessed about it and politicians were obsessed about it for months in 2010. But this really stirred up a lot of anxiety in the country and that has really persisted since this time. And now we have politicians sort of tapping into this anxiety and trying to mobilize it, trying to galvanize support based upon it.
And here we are. I mean, do you give any, is there atmospheric problem? People look at the Middle East and ISIS and all that and say, oh, you know, that looks so difficult. We see all the people coming out of Syria. We don't want any of that here. So no, thank you.
I think that's part of it. Certainly even our policies on how many Syrian refugees to admit into the country says something about Islamophobia at work at a higher level, where we have politicians advising against this for fear that ISIS will somehow infiltrate the country. But that's also operating under the assumption that anyone who's Muslim is by definition prone to terrorism and we need to be fearful of them and sort of keep them away from our borders.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Islam, American politics, and Islamophobia in America. There is a lot of angry, frightened talk out there lately, and we're looking at what's going on with Todd Green, professor of religion at Luther College, with Yasser Qadhi, Muslim scholar, writer, Sunni cleric, professor of religious studies at Rhodes College. We heard Donald Trump's response to the guy in the audience in New Hampshire last week. It wasn't always like that. It wasn't always like Donald Trump. John McCain responded very differently back in 2008. And even his response, where he called a woman out and said, no, the president's not Muslim, and talked about all the rest. For some very prominent Americans, he could have gone even further, maybe should have. Here's former Secretary of State Colin Powell. Soon after McCain's answer, which in itself was very different than Donald Trump's answer, here's Colin Powell.
I'm also troubled by not what Senator McCain says, but what members of the party say. And it is permitted to be said such things as, well, you know that Mr. Obama is a Muslim. Well, the correct answer is he is not a Muslim. He's a Christian. He's always been a Christian. But the really right answer is, what if he is? Is there something wrong with being a Muslim in this country? The answer is no, that's not America.
The answer is no, that's not America, Colin Powell. In New Hampshire, Senator Bernie Sanders, over the weekend, talking here about Ben Carson's comments on Meet the Press. Bernie Sanders.
And people say, no, we don't want a black guy, an African-American, to be president of the United States. And then finally, Barack Obama became president of the United States. Look, you judge candidates for president not on their religion, not on the color of their skin, but on their ideas, on what they stand for. That's what democracy is supposed to be about. So I was very disappointed in Dr. Carson's statement. I disagree with him.
And then, of course, there's a story in Texas of the boy, 14, taken off after he came to school with the clock. Now he's got an invitation to the White House and all the rest. But skepticism there, too. On HBO last Friday, Bill Maher voicing his reaction, skeptical about Ahmed Mohammed's arrest in Irving, Texas. Maybe about Ahmed.
Somebody look me in the eye right here and tell me, over the last 30 years, if so many young Muslim men, and he's young, 14, mm-hmm. but that's not never happened before,
right?
Hasn't blown a lot of up around the world. And this kid deserves an apology because he wasn't one of them.
Bill Maher, not going for kumbaya there. Marcia in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Marcia, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just want you to reflect a little bit, as other callers have talked about historical incidents, including mm-hmm. Japanese internment, to recall when John Kennedy ran for president, the fear about Catholicism and that he would be beholden to the Pope.
Yes.
And now we have the Pope in Washington ready to speak to Congress.
Yeah.
And I think people need to remind themselves that we all have to learn from history and remind ourselves that there is change possible if we open our hearts to that.
Marcia, I appreciate that reminder and your call. Todd Green, of course, President Kennedy, candidate Kennedy, came out and said very clearly that there would be this division away from the authority of the Catholic Church, but there he was, elected, and there were questions. Is this different, the tenor, the texture of what we're seeing now, different from the questions that arose when John F. Kennedy was running for president as a Roman Catholic?
There are a lot of similarities, particularly this idea historically in the United States among the Protestant majority that Catholicism was a religion that was beholden to a foreign prince. Catholics couldn't be loyal citizens to the United States. It was an oppressive religion, a domineering religion. It oppressed women, you know, in the form of nuns and that sort of thing. So we've actually encountered those same stereotypes of Catholicism historically in the United States that we have with Muslims. And the main difference probably is just the number of Catholics historically versus the number of Muslims. In time, Catholics have entered more into the mainstream, but they've also been have had larger numbers. Muslims make up roughly 1% of the U.S. population, which is all the more baffling in terms of why there's all this anxiety over Muslims imposing Sharia law or trying to take over the country. I just don't comprehend how 1% of the population could take over the country, even they've wanted to. But this also makes it a little bit more difficult to combat this prejudice, in part because so many Americans don't interact with Muslims on a daily basis in the way that in the past decades they have with Catholics. Actually, about 2/3 of Americans claim that they don't personally know a Muslim.
Roger in Lexington, Kentucky. Roger, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
I'm okay.
The point I would like to make on this topic is, I can say, coming from a personal background, being in the military and serving in overseas, I've seen, you know, the radical side of Islam.
Okay.
And I wouldn't say, you know, that I have a problem with Islam, maybe at one point in life, but as you know, grown older, it's kind of dissipated. But I see where the problems come from is that a lot of the radical stuff going on in the world today, with the rise of ISIS in the Middle East and suicide attacks and bombings, is an interpretation of Islam. Well, a lot of people just hear Islam, and you're not getting those radical interpretations. You know, you got right-wing radicals in Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
You also have it in about all major religions in the world, but the majority of violence today is a radical interpretation of Islam. So I think there needs to be an education, a real education of the American population that practices this faith to, you know, basically educate people that aren't familiar with Islam. I think a lot of it's just people are afraid from what they've seen on the news and the way it's portrayed. Because a lot of times when you see it on the news, you don't see it's a, they say an Islamic extremist, but they don't, you know, really go much further than that.
Yeah, Roger, I appreciate the way you're wrestling with it, and you bring your experience in the military right in the teeth of some of those conflicts back to us. And Yasser Qadhi, it makes me wonder, this comes back to, we do see plenty of problems these days in the wider Muslim world, certainly in the Middle East and beyond. And one can't help wondering if part of this is people looking out, seeing that violence and often chaos. And if you look at the history, it's not as though we have no, our hands have never been in there. Certainly not. I mean, that's not the case, but that they haven't. But is that setting a tone that's unsettling to people in your view that makes the hurdle higher to get to understand, to get to comfort? Yes, Connie.
Definitely, Tom. The fact of the matter is that when you see these gruesome images of ISIS, for example, beheading and whatnot, it's very easy to extrapolate the fear of ISIS onto your American Muslim neighbor, let's say. But my point is that's exactly where education comes into play, and we root out bigotry and racism. ISIS is indeed a threat to all of us. It's a threat to civilization. Everybody understands that. But do realize that the majority of people ISIS has killed, the majority of people it's harmed, are in fact Muslims. In fact, look at what's happening, for example, in Syria right now, where tens of thousands of people are fleeing both Bashar al-Assad's regime and ISIS. These are Muslims. They're fleeing away from ISIS. To presume that these refugees, these innocent children and women, are somehow secret ISIS, you know, terrorists and secret cells, I think that's not just tragic, it's ludicrous. So ISIS is not merely coming out of the religion, and we've had this conversation before, Tom. Mm-hmm. There are political factors, and the world in that part of the world is very religious, and therefore all expressions of political activism, whether they're pacifist, whether they're within the democratic process, whether they're outside of the democratic process, will have their roots in religion. ISIS represents an extremely minuscule percentage of the Muslim world, and most of the people it's harmed are Muslims.
Oh, Michael, Dearborn, Michigan. Michael, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Professor Qadhi. I would say that there is a fatigue amongst most Americans with Islam in our country, and you're seeing that across the world. And we understand that it's a small percentage of the population. We understand that 99.9%, as you said, Tom, of Muslims are peaceful, but you can only hear so many stories coming out of Denmark, coming out of Norway, now Hungary, of incidents where Muslims refuse to assimilate within the society. And we're seeing that here in Dearborn, which is the most Middle Eastern city outside of the Middle East. And the big migration of the early 1900s, when my great-grandparents came to this country, Giuseppe Verdi became Joe Green. They wanted to become part of the American society, regardless of what your background and ethnicity was, you became part of something larger. I can tell you today, factually, on the ground in Dearborn, that is not the case, that immigrants to the United States, to this area, do not want to assimilate. They do not want to adopt American culture. They want us to bend to their rules and to their whim. And there is tremendous fatigue as a result of this. Americans are understanding. Americans are compassionate. But we can only take so much. And until we see mainstream Islam really doing their best to distance themselves from some of these radical clerics, this is going to continue.
Michael, hang on. Dr. Cotty, what do you say to Michael in Dearborn? Dearborn's a special case, but nevertheless, what do you say, Dr. Cotty?
Well, who gets to define assimilation? Who gets to define American values? The fact that I don't drink or I don't, let's say, take marijuana, for example, that's also becoming an American value in some states. Who gets to define that? I think I'm assimilated. I think I'm me and other millions of American Muslims are fully acclimatized to American culture. We are a part of this land and civilization, but we might not share each and every quote-unquote value according to your definition. The main definition should be, are we loyal, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens? Are we upholding the Constitution? That's really the main criterion, if you like. And if you take that as the criterion, I think it's very difficult to make a case that the Muslims of Dearborn are somehow un-American.
Michael, would that be enough for you? Loyal, law-abiding, tax-paying citizens?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Why not?
What the country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. Because what you're seeing is, across the world, now again, I travel constantly. I was just in Denmark, and there's a tremendous fatigue in Copenhagen with the Islamic immigrants there because they want the social benefits that the Danes offer. They don't want to have any part of Danish society save for a check at the beginning and the 15th of every month. I'm not all these voices,
loyal, law-abiding, and tax-paying citizens who support the Constitution is not enough?
It's not enough because part of the American experience and part of the American experiment is that we treat each other with respect and with dignity.
Well, including people of different religions, right? I mean, Protestant, Catholic, Jewish, Buddhist, religion. Muslim?
My neighbors in Dearborn are not allowed to drive. Not because they are not of age or not safe drivers, because they are women and their family forbids it. The daughter.
I'm sorry, I have to say here. I have
yes, sir, Cotty, yes. Michael, thank you. Yes, sir, Cotty, please.
I'm sorry, I have visited Dearborn at least 50 times in my life. I lecture there constantly. My students are female. They come driving their own cars. And it's this anecdotal evidence of my neighbor's daughters are not allowed to drive. I mean, okay, let's go and find out. If they're genuinely deprived of their constitutional right, let's get the law involved. But to extrapolate from this one pseudo-incident that the entire American Muslim community is somehow living under female oppression.
No.
Here, this is the fear-mongering, and that's where I draw the line and say, no, we're just as human and we're just as American as everybody else. And my sincere request to every single listener out there, don't take your understanding of Islam from Ben Carson or from Ms. Sandy Rios. Go meet an American Muslim. Go to your local mosque and walk in. Believe me, we're not going to bite. We're not going to harm you. Just socialize with us, and you'll see we're just as human and we're just as American.
Tracy, Oriskany, New York. Tracy, you're on.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Dr. Cotty.
Hi.
I just like to say that I'm very disappointed in Christians on the whole. I think they're missing a huge opportunity to further understanding between the Christian and Muslim world. And for the last caller, I don't think it's fair to vilify those who don't want to assimilate. We have religious sects in this country that live independently. The Amish, the Mennonites, the Mormons are all given their own settlements to oversee in their own way. Our government does not interfere with their goings-on as long as they remain lawful. And I really cannot forget, you know, let's not forget that Christianity does not have an unblemished past.
Tracy, I appreciate your call. Our time is short. Todd Green, you've looked at all of this. How do we settle the boat here? It just seems like such an unsettled moment. How do we get sort of back on the beam?
We begin by calling this what it is. It's bigotry. We need to stop framing this conversation as this is a legitimate controversy with legitimate disagreements when it comes to what is outright bigotry. This is how a lot of the media is framing, even including the GOP candidate comments recently. But Dr. Carson, for example, is not making controversial comments. He's making Islamophobic comments. Let's give it a name. And we can start also by pushing back against these politicians and public figures much more who actually stir this up. My message, Tom, to Dr. Carson would be tap into that inner physician inside of you. Once upon a time, early in your career, you made a sacred oath to do no harm to your fellow human being, to promote the health and the well-being of others. Islamophobia, bigotry, it does the exact opposite. It encourages harm and it encourages hostility towards our fellow human being. And I want Dr. Carson, I want the physician to come out on the campaign trail, not the politician who's willing to target Muslims for cheap shots and create a hostile atmosphere, which is going to cause harm. It's going to affect the lives and the livelihoods of American Muslims. We need to start challenging politicians much more aggressively and call this what it is. It is a form of bigotry. It is Islamophobia, and we should not be afraid of that. And let me commend NPR for actually using the word Islamophobia on today's program.
Yes, Akadi, where's the hope here in this picture, sir?
The hope is that I think there's a huge pushback from many segments of American society. You're a shining example. Many other people, Bernie Sanders has come out, Hillary Clinton has come out. So the positive here, the silver lining, is that hopefully I really am optimistic that the type of bigotry we saw 50 years ago, 7 years ago, will not be repeated.
Sheikh Dr. Yasir Qadhi, Professor of Religious Studies at Rhodes College, Dean of Academic Affairs at the Al-Maghrib Institute, Islamic Education Institution. Dr. Qadhi, thanks for joining us today again.
Thank you for having me on, Tom.
And Todd Green, Associate Professor of Religion at Luther College, with us today from Rochester, Minnesota, author of The Fear of Islam. Todd Green, thank you for joining us.
Thanks, Tom. It was a pleasure.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. On Point is produced by Nick Anderson, Catherine Brewer, Abigail Collins, Julie Jopp, Eileen Imada, Stefano Katsonis, Sarah Platt, Caitlin O'Keefe, James Ross, Abby Ruzica, with help from Fatima Tanis and Dave Tarantino. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thank you for joining us. This is On Point.